Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. When J. Byrne Murphy moved to France in the early 1990s to launch the European division of MacArthur Glen, a company that operates high-fashion outlet malls, he was sure the venture would be a slam dunk. The MacArthur Glen concept had been a tremendous success in America, and the fashion-loving European market seemed like a natural fit. But, as he describes in his new book, Le Deal, what Murphy didn't realize was that he was walking into a political, perfect storm of anti-American sentiment and protectionist policies that included the Prime Minister of France declaring a moratorium on all new retail development across the country. He joins us today on Edgewise to tell us how he managed to launch what became a multi-billion dollar business in the face of steep odds. Mr. Murphy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
You faced a lot of opposition in France, as you describe in the book. At one point, the highest levels of French national government were lining up against your company. Why are American businesses so disliked in France?
There are several angles to it. There are many, many established and well-respected American businesses in France. What is very difficult is starting up a new one. I ran up against a two-edged sword, if you will, both on a general situation and then on a specific. At the time that I came to France in the early 90s, it was in recession. There was a great feeling of, the French say, malaise. It was very pessimistic. And it was the beginning of the first waves of resistance to globalization that was being felt across Europe. If you recall, there were great marches against McDonald's and how it was going to ruin their lifestyle. In my specific case, I was trying to bring a fresh new American concept to France and to Europe. And it was a concept which needed many public approvals from wary French politicians just after the Disneyland Paris opening had occurred, an opening which was, in fact, a PR disaster as well as a commercial disaster. So when some fresh-faced young American comes in and says, hey, I've got a great new concept and I just want your political support, and off we go, the politicians were saying, no, I don't think so. More generally, I would say American business in Europe is on a set of scales, like the scales of justice. So on one side, you have this enormous respect for American acumen and for the innovations that the Americans have come up with since World War II. And on the other scale is a sense of resentment for how much they've achieved and sometimes how they handle those achievements.
Right.
When you have too much brusqueness or too much arrogance by America or American politicians on the national, international scene, those scales get out of sync. The resentment outweighs the respect. And if you're trying to set up a new business right then, that's a difficult environment.
What would you say was the biggest culture shock for you business-wise in France?
I think I had a double-barrel shock. One was the role of the government in the private sector. France is a statist economy with very, very large organizations like Crédit Agricole and Peugeot. And the role of entrepreneurialism is very minor. And in fact, the regulatory environment is skewed completely against it. To start up a new company is overcoming just too many hurdles. The second difficulty, which is perhaps the most challenging of all, was creating a team out of a group. In France, individualism is extremely highly prized, as it is here in America, but we also grow up as kids on teams all the time, shifting teams in the different seasons, shifting teams in schools and in the business environment. In France, to get a group to work as a team is extremely difficult.
What are some of the most common misconceptions that we Americans have about Europeans, the way they approach business?
We believe Europeans approach business in the same way that Americans do, that creating shareholder value and generating profits are the primary motivators. The presumption in America is that if an individual works hard to contribute to that economic success, then he or she should participate in it. In Europe, the primary question which is posed is, what is the company doing for me as an employee? Or if you're the politician, what is this company doing for the social good overall? And frankly, it's a fair question, but you have to remember the social safety net in Europe is extremely high, cradle to grave support throughout, and they come to expect it. So many of the times somebody will walk in and say, what's the company going to do for me today, instead of what can I do to help the company's success?
Byrne, have you found that looking at business from a different cultural perspective has changed the way you look at the way business is done in America? Do you think there are some areas where American businesses could benefit from emulating their European counterparts?
There are a number of things you can take away. Number one, there are certainly longer time horizons. We're very focused here in America on the return on equity or the return on investment very fast, whether it's at a quarterly basis or a payback in a couple of years. But on the other hand, Europe measures its history in millennia, not in centuries. And they look out for the longer time horizon. And therefore, they often build more social values into the design element of what I do, which is the built environment in an urban setting. Secondly, I used to think of zoning regulations here in America as something you had to get by, get on and do what you really wanted to do. I've come to think of them with a longer time horizon as ways in which projects can be much better considered in the conception stage and how they can contribute to the long-term health of communities. I am all in favor, as long as they are well applied.
Okay. What are your connections in Europe telling you about their perspective on what's happening on Wall Street in recent days?
Interesting you asked that. I just came back from almost a week-long conference with many of the European players at Pi Finance, and the old adage that when America catches a cold, Europe catches pneumonia is absolutely true. So if we're very concerned here, they're panicked there. The level of concern could not possibly be higher. There is no debt to be found in the capital markets today. You could have a fabulous project, gushing cash, but if your loan comes up for renewal, good luck. So some of the Europeans are saying, well, there goes America, another overindulgence, and look what you've done to our system. But on the other hand, the sophisticated business people realize where everything is interrelated, and they're very concerned for their home markets and their home employees and profitability, because if the mothership in Wall Street goes down, they have a big problem.
Bern, you oversaw stores operating in France, Britain, Italy, and Germany. In your opinion, which of those markets was the toughest to do business in?
Germany.
And why is that?
That's because I was in the retailing sector. All of Europe takes the role of the small retailers very, very seriously, and Germany more so. And that is not an unheard of story by many, many retailers trying to get in there. There are two very powerful forces at play. In Europe in general, the emphasis is on job preservation, not job creation. That's number one. Number two, in Germany in general, they have an extremely attractive social safety network set up by the government. They also had 100 years of history where they were the aggressor and upset a lot of balances. Now that they have a very comfortable situation with a great social safety net, they're not the aggressor. They just want everything to stay the way it is. They don't need to stir it up because this has served them well in the last 60 years. The other thing is, in Germany, once rules have been established and set, not only are they followed in lockstep for decades on end, but sometimes the rules are woefully out of date. They just stay in the books because those are the rules.
Right.
And changing
exactly.
Is very difficult.
Is that sort of a ripple effect of the old craftsmanship days where you had these masters and craftsmen and it was all sort of a local business?
Absolutely, yes. It all came out of the original guild. People belonged to a certain guild. They were the bricklayer or they were the butcher or they were the baker. Today, you have the German Retailers Federation. You have the unions, which are very strong. And then you also have the extremely powerful green lobby, the environmentalists, who are the strongest in Germany than anywhere. Combined together, if you have an out-of-town retail concept, You're going to have a very, very tough time.
Oh, yeah.
And I must say, it's their country, it's their choice, it's their culture. They ought to pay a little bit of attention because the rules that I referred to earlier were written in the 1930s. Women weren't in the workforce then. People didn't work so late during the week. They needed Saturday opening hours. So certain things need to be updated. I will say, we worked hard to get into Germany, and after 7 years, gave up, didn't go in there. But they have subsequently loosened up some of the retailing rules.
Bern, you've worked with a lot of people across a lot of different cultures in launching MacArthur Glen in Europe. What would you say are the keys to building a successful international team?
First, you have to create a value structure for the team. We had 7 offices across Europe in Germany, Italy, France, England, Belgium, Austria. You set up the value structure by being the person who knows the concept well, who knows what you're trying to achieve, but that person has to lead from the front. In the early days in France, as outlined in this book, that clearly was me. And the person in front has to take the hit again and again and again. You have to be the object of all the negative feedback that this won't work, that you're trying to upset the balance. And your team, or the group of people who you're trying to turn into a team, has to see that you're willing to take those punches over and over. And once they do, they know you're going to stand up for them when they go out to do it. Secondly, you have to set very simple, understandable goals. So simple that language barriers and cultural barriers don't get in the way. Remember, we had 8 different languages and a dozen different cultures ongoing. But the last thing is the most important. Once you set those goals and once you have your value structure, then you need to listen to the head of each country on how best to implement those in that culture. You have to listen and you have to hear. And it's the hearing that's the hardest part. And it's the hearing that Americans aren't so good at in foreign cultures, because this is how we did it in New York. This is how we do it in L.A. This is how I want to do it in Berlin.
Oh, yes. You've been in business in Europe since right around the inception of the European Union. From your perspective, how has doing business in Europe changed since then?
It is certainly easier, definitely, but it's still much more difficult than in the States. But it's easier, firstly, because the euro is there. So you have a single currency, and that takes away an awful lot of risk and complication, structuring and documentation, the whole thing. But secondly, clearly, whatever globalization is in your mind, it has set in more in Europe and elsewhere now than when I arrived in 1992. There are many more capital sources that understand going across borders, helped by the euro. There are many capital sources who understand you can start new concepts. So the infrastructure is there much better for those who have a new idea and want to try bringing a new concept to foreign cultures.
Has it allowed you to centralize any type of operations or back office stuff?
Centralize?
Yeah, because of the European Union.
Oh, definitely. We worked hard at that for all the back of house, the accounting and the HR policies, et cetera. Yes, but I hasten to add, there is a limit to which you can do that. And I would strongly recommend you don't try to overdo it, because to a certain extent, there is no Europe like there is an America. And the role of the nation state there is much weaker than you might presume. They are regional economies that sometimes cross over national borders. And the more you try to centralize, the more you're going to rub up against that. So there are economies of scale to be had. But as I said earlier, listen and hear. Culture matters. Context matters a lot. Ignore them, and surprises are coming your way. Most of them will be unpleasant.
So in conclusion, Bern, are there any additional thoughts on this topic?
I want to point out that optimism is one of America's great traits. We're a young country, and we know in our bones that if we set a goal, we will achieve it one way or the other. But when you're going into a foreign culture, you must, as I said earlier, take context into consideration. You must understand it's their culture. And in fact, it's their playing field, it's their ball, and it's their rules. You have to recognize that. But once you've done that, it's your optimism. And with American optimism in foreign cultures, almost anything is possible if you take context into account. It is a wide open field, and I strongly encourage anyone who has a sincere interest in doing it to pursue those in foreign markets.
Bern, thanks for being our guest here on the program. We've been talking to Bern Murphy, who is the author of a new book, Le Deal. Thanks, Bern.
Thank you very much for having me.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.